going to shake up the points. Going to put Hamlin to the top, Keselowski, and then Larson. As Kyle Larson wins Las Vegas.
Hell yeah, guys. Great job.
Seventh career win for the 28-year-old from Elk Grove, California. Last one in October 2019 at Dover.
And welcome into Chasing Checkers, the great voice of Mike Joy of Fox NASCAR. It's Kyle Larson. It didn't take long. He joins Hendrick Motorsports. He gets his first win just four races into the season. Hope you're having a great start to your Saturday morning. Chase McCabe here with you. We are here every Saturday at 9 o'clock. Chasing Checkers, presented by the Nashville Super Speedway. Excited to have them on board as Father's Day weekend, not too far away, the Ally 400 will take place out at the Nashville Super Speedway. But pretty cool for Kyle Larson to get the win, the Pennzoil 400 presented by Jiffy Lube at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. He gets it done, and we're going to talk about it today here on the show. You can also watch us as we enter the final frontier, the new frontier, I guess is the best way to put it, a little Star Trek reference. You can watch us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Twitter. This is something we are working on, rolling out. You're going to see this more and more here on our radio station, and I'm putting a lot of this together, so I'm the guinea pig. So I'm like, hey, we'll put it on Chasing Checkers and see what it looks like. So check it out as we are streaming live, and you can also listen on your radio and the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. So appreciate you joining us here today. Dr. Jerry Punch, legendary pit reporter, long time with ESPN, going to join us a little later on, 9:15 he'll be on the show. So can't wait to talk to him. Going to be a lot of fun. So Kyle Larson leads 103 laps at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway in the Pennzoil 400. And, I thought the week before at Homestead he looked pretty good. And remember I told you, he was one to watch out for. I had him in the Sunday Money Picks because he knows how to run the wall. And so it made sense that he could possibly win Homestead. Took him another week, but four races in, he is already impressed and already has his first win with Hendrick Motorsports. Maybe it's surprising to some people that it was that quick, but to me, I knew that they were going to win. I knew that was going to be a good combination because after everything that he went through, after the incident on iRacing where he said something that we all know he shouldn't have said, got suspended, lost his ride, let's be honest, he came out better because he ended up going to Hendrick, one of the best teams in NASCAR, in the 5 car. You knew he was going to have good equipment, but chemistry takes a while, and you kind of wondered, all right, are they going to win right off the bat? Is it going to take a few races? Is it more of the midpoint of the season that they're going to be able to get it done? Nope. Took four races, and he only ran four races last year. That's what's crazy. He only had four before the pause, and then everything happened during the pause. So pretty cool to see Kyle Larson dominate like he did. Like I said, 103 laps. He won stage two, third top 10 finish so far this year in four races. He has come off very, very, very strong in the early going with Hendrick Motorsports. And of course, right after that win, he did what they all do, caught up with Regan Smith of Fox NASCAR.
Yeah, thanks. It was such an awesome race car. Cliff and everybody did a great job preparing this piece. It was so much fun to drive. I could go wherever I wanted to. So I knew I had a really good car once we kind of get single filed out, but just drafting early in the run was tough. But thank you so much, Mr. H, Jeff Gordon, everybody at Hendrick Motorsports, for the amazing opportunity I've been gifted. So HendrickCars.com, Chevrolet, everybody at the engine shop, thank you so much for the hard work. This is definitely special.
You mentioned Mr. Hendrick and everything that he's done for you in your career. You're running the number 5 that Ricky Hendrick made so famous when he was driving. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. I know that this is Rick's most special paint scheme for obvious reasons, and it's just an honor for me to be able to drive it our first time out with this color scheme, and just like I said, it's blessed, and thanks to all the fans for coming out. Everybody at home watching on TV, that was some fun racing on the restart, so I hope everybody enjoyed it. I know I did, and had fun racing Brad and Denny and everybody, and tried giving it away there coming to the green flag stop. But thankfully, we were able to have a good enough car to hold them all off.
Kyle Larson, after the win with Regan Smith of Fox NASCAR, and he did mention that paint scheme, Ricky Hendrick's paint scheme. Of course, Ricky Hendrick lost in that plane crash many, many years ago. But, you know, and that was one thing of, okay, what sponsors are going to come on with him, and some have, but HendrickCars.com has definitely, you know, been one that's going to be on that race car. But it looked fast. It definitely looked fast, like Ricky Hendrick did when he ran in the Busch Series in that paint scheme. And so he brought up the restarts. Let me tell you, this was one of the most exciting races that I can remember from Las Vegas. I went there a couple years ago, and it was fun. Like, I had a lot of fun, but they were just the new rules package. They were just at the beginning stages of that, and so they hadn't made some of the tweaks, and they've done that now. And you had 12 different leaders, 27 different lead changes. I remember seeing a tweet from DW, who joined us last week, Darrell Waltrip, talking about just how fun it has been, because it was, I don't want to say it was like super speedway racing, but it had that thrill of just the back and forth. And even though Larson led 103 laps, it was very competitive, and you kind of didn't know for a while, at least in the middle stages, okay, well, who's going to come away with this? It felt, you know, as it shook out, like, all right, Larson's got this in the back. But 27 lead changes, like I said. So a lot of fun racing with this rules package, and I think you're going to see fun racing again this week. I love when people refer to Phoenix as a short track, even though it's, I think it's a mile. It's not really a short track, but it races that way, and it's going to be fun too. But Brad Keselowski, you heard Larson mention him, finishes second. And, I thought that he had maybe something for Kyle Larson. 11, it was his 11th top 10 at Vegas in 16 races, second top 10 of the year in 2021. He has performed well at Las Vegas, but second is where he would be, and he just didn't quite have enough to get to Larson.
You know, in order to be better, I mean, he just had a little more speed than we had today. You know, I could wrangle the top and make something happen. I could wrangle the bottom a little bit, make something happen on restarts. But he just he could run as fast as we could down the straightaways, and just a little bit faster than us in the corners.
There you go, Brad Keselowski on his second place finish. Now, as I looked at the points getting ready for the show, Denny Hamlin, who does not have a win yet this year, we'll get to that. He's first. Brad Keselowski, 38 points back in second. Larson with his win already, third. Chase Elliott, the defending Cup Series champion, is fourth. Christopher Bell is fifth. That's the top five right now. And so if you think about the contenders so far, we know McDowell won the 500. Christopher Bell won at the road course. William Byron won at Homestead. And then Larson has won now at Las Vegas. Do we believe who the contenders are through four races? Four races is sometimes a good gauge to look at that sort of thing. I still think it's playing out, because I think there's one guy that we haven't heard a lot about yet, and we've talked a lot about in the past year for the wrong reasons, because he hasn't been winning. Kyle Busch, how close is he to getting that first win with Ben Bieschore as his crew chief, getting back to victory lane? I think they're close. I don't think they're there yet. And Kyle Busch actually commented on what the process has been like of getting to that point and building that chemistry with Ben Bieschore.
You know, it's just I don't know, man. It's interesting. You know, last week we were on the simulator and for Homestead, and same thing for this week for Vegas. And it's just not correlating close enough for us, you know, and if we can get that better and get that closer, I feel like there's something there. But, you know, obviously just off on balance to start, got way better towards the end. Still, there was room for improvement there at the end, but overall our speed was a little off. We weren't going to keep up with the five or the two, and Definitely on restarts, we could see that I was really slow and just getting attacked on by everybody and drug backwards. So it took me a while to fight my way back up front, but that was our day.
Kyle Busch on his third place finish and working with Ben Bishore. It's going to take time, but I do think that they're close. And it has certainly been an adjustment for him not having practice. He's such a perfectionist that he fine tunes how he drives the car, tells him how to fine tune the car during practice, and he doesn't have that. Since the pandemic, there's no practice. So he does not have that to work through, and they're having to rely on the simulator. And I'll be honest with you, I don't understand that much about the simulator and how just sophisticated these things are. But Kyle went on to talk about of how they're off when he runs the simulator and he tells them what to feel. And you're seeing other teams do this too, but that they're a little off when they get to the racetrack.
Every track's different. Every week it seems to be close or far away or whatever, you know? So it's interesting on how we can figure it all out. But yeah, I mean, last year, once we lost practice and everything like that, and we knew we weren't going to go back to practice, we would go to the simulator every single week. And I spent 5 hours there, you know, working on things and trying to get us, the right balance that I feel like on the sim and a raceable one where I feel like I can drive the car the particular way that you need to be able to drive it in the race, on there and then in real life. And it's just not quite correlating between the two. You know, this week we came to the racetrack, super, super tight. I mean, just eight numbers tighter on the racetrack than it was in sim. And typically when you're good in sim, you're about two numbers loose. So I don't know. I mean, that's a 10 number difference, right? So it's just a big deal. I mean, a lot of it is tire. We got to figure out the tire model and trying to make what we think is right there. But I don't know. We'll just keep working on it. It's the only tool we got.
Kyle Busch, driver of the number 18, and just how far off they are from the sim and getting to the racetrack. I'll say this. These are his numbers for Phoenix. He has an average finish of 10.5, three wins, 12 top 10s, 12 top 5s, 22 top 10s. He finished third in this race last year, 11th in the fall, but the things fell off for him as the season went on. I don't think it's going to be this weekend. I don't think they're there yet. But I think he's very close. Kyle Busch is going to win some races this year. He's going to be back. For whatever reason, this has been a bigger adjustment for him. And like I said, just how he goes about practice. It's been a bigger adjustment for him than it has been for others. And I think Gibbs in general, you know, outside of Hamlin, they've been adjusting on some things. Kyle Busch is going to get back to victory lane. I don't think it's going to be this weekend, but I do think he's very, very close to winning. So as we break down the top 10 at Vegas, Kyle Larson, as we said, wins the race. Brad Keselowski second. Kyle Busch third. Denny Hamlin fourth. Ryan Blaney with a very, very, very needed top five. Martin Truex Jr. sixth. Christopher Bell seventh. William Byron comes home eighth. Joey Logano, who I thought would perform a little bit better, comes home ninth, and a solid top 10 for Eric Jones and the Petty Camp. When we come back, Dr. Jerry Punch is going to join us, longtime ESPN pit reporter. Can't wait to talk to him about what he's doing now and things going on in NASCAR. Get his thoughts on that. We will do that when we return here on Chasing Checkers. We are presented by the Nashville Super Speedway on ESPN 102. Welcome back in Chasing Checkers, presented by the Nashville Super Speedway, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're here every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Chase McCabe hanging out with you and excited to be joined by our next guest. One of the best in the business when it comes to reporting on pit road, Dr. Jerry Punch, longtime pit reporter here with us and lap-by-lap announcer, too. Dr. Punch, how you doing?
Chase, I'm great. Good to be with you this morning.
Yes, thank you so much for taking some time to join us. Let's start with what's been going on with you. How has the last year been for Dr. Jerry Punch?
Probably like everybody else. I hope I never hear the words quarantine again. But, yeah, everything that I was scheduled to do, you know, I'm not a full-time ESPN guy anymore. That after 33 years, that sort of went away at the end of 18. But I was asked to come back and do college football and do other events and sports, and I've been going and doing some things in IndyCar racing and staying busy doing a podcast with my daughter. And so anyway, the long story short, a lot of the things that I've been doing, you know, corporate speaking events, USA Today, in fact, one of the high school award shows we have there in Nashville, it had to be canceled, and we did it virtually for now on a national scale. But all those things went away. So we just sort of sat around and waited for hopefully us to get a handle on the virus. And thankfully, after a year, we seem to be heading that direction. Motorsports fans are coming back. We have a basketball tournament. Little tournament headed. It's going on in town there in Nashville. That didn't happen a year ago. It started to happen and then got shut down very quickly. So, yeah, we're coming out the backside. But answer your question, things that last, you know, not a lot for 6 or 8 months, and then suddenly the last few months we've gotten busy. I went over and it was with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Last week to do as a guest on his show, and we were talking about a lot of things there. By the way, he's excited to be at Nashville Super Speedway. That's going to be the opening race, I think, for NBC. They're all excited to get back and be able to get back to a racetrack, which I always love. I broadcast a lot of races on ESPN from there over the years in trucks and Xfinity and IndyCar. So I can't wait for that to get opened back up.
Yeah, we're excited to have the sport back. Well, IndyCar is coming here too, so we'll get into that. But let's talk about Rolling with the Punches, the podcast that you're doing. I think that's really cool that you're able to share that with your daughter.
It is. It's we talk about. I was talking to Dale Jr. about, you know, how you want to sort of want to follow in your father's footsteps and how thrilled it is. And I told him, I said, your dad, if he were here today, would be so proud of you for. Not only what you've done with your driving career, but, you know, the father and husband you are. But now with my daughter, Jessie, you know, who works for NASCAR, she grew up with a passion for NASCAR like I did. And so we get to, you know, it was her idea, and some people inside the building there in Charlotte said, why don't you do this thing with your dad? Because he's been around for all these years, meaning I'm old. But he said, he can reach out and touch the legacy fans and talk about some of the great moments in NASCAR when this happened and that happened with Richard Petty and Kelly Arbor and Pearson and Elliott and Waltrips and Earnhardt. And he said, and then she does a show in NASCAR, and she does with the current drivers and the future stars, the young up-and-coming drivers. So you two guys can sort of span 6 decades and tell stories. And so that's where we are. We started doing it. We've gotten really, really good feedback. Started this last year, gotten great feedback. We started having special guests on to tell their story, people I've met over the years. And what we tried to do is model it, not only talking about what happened last week and what may happen this week in NASCAR in all the series, even going back down to some of the regional series, but also maybe a little bit of bet you didn't know behind the scenes, sort of the old, like Paul Harvey said, you know, the rest of the story kind of deal. We stories I couldn't tell on the air at ESPN years ago, but now we can tell the backstory of how this really happened. So it's maybe, I think fans, from the feedback we're getting, fans enjoy that part as well.
Yeah, I love that stuff. And, you know, I listening to your podcast and Dale Jr.'s, and, you know, just because I think people love to be able to go backstage, you know, as they say, and learn those things that they didn't know. And I've been a fan of the sport my entire life, but listening to, you know, some of these podcasts that you're all doing and learning more, I mean, it's fascinating for me to hear some of these stories.
Well, thank you. Chase, I appreciate that. I love telling them, and you know, I love being a part, you know, the diehard, the core NASCAR fans years ago when it was a regional sport, you know, haven't really gone away. They just need to reconnect a little bit. I think they're starting to do that now. But when ESPN got NASCAR, we lost NASCAR at the end of 2000, and then we were gone for 6 years and got it back in 2007. But all the executives that were there with NASCAR, up until 2000, they all left. The motorsports guys, the motorheads, the guys that love motorsports. And so when we got it back in 2007, they had people that were in charge of the sport who really didn't know much about it. And so suddenly here's me and Rusty Wallace that are going to call the races along with Andy Petrie and later Dale Jarrett. So our job is to go to ESPN and try to explain to these people what NASCAR is about. And I'll never forget going into a room with a bunch of SportsCenter executives and a couple of upper-level executives and saying, this is what NASCAR is. And one of the executives stood up and said, you know, our coverage of NASCAR will not include, will absolutely not include any country music. No country music. And I stood up and said, Rusty and I stood up and said, what? That's like taking hot dogs out of a baseball park. You can't do that. He said, it's going to be Aerosmith and Steven Tyler and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, holy cow. And so I stood there, probably not a good move on my part initially, but I stood there and I said, tell you what, let's do it. Let's you and I walk through the infield at Talladega, because it was still, you know, in a couple of weeks. We still hadn't taken over yet, but they were making plans, because they grew up in the Northeast where country music maybe wasn't a big thing genre for him. He was a big, you know, rock. And anyway, so I said, I tell you, let's do this. You and I walk through the infield at Talladega, and for every Steven Tyler or Aerosmith song you hear, I'll give you a dollar. And then for every Garth Brooks song you hear, you give me a dollar, and I promise you I'll retire by the time we get to turn two. I said, people love country music in the sport. It's part of the fabric of the sport. I said, it is what it is. And so they were not, they just didn't understand. And quite honestly, I remember doing a race in Nashville. We came on the air with some shots from downtown Nashville with all the music going on, the people milling around. And I said, welcome to Music City, USA, you know, Nashville, Tennessee, and so and so. And we came on and did it on camera. And I asked Dale Jarrett and Rusty Wallace and Andy Petrie, I said, okay, if today's race were a country music song, what would the title be? And they all came up with a cute little title about what we're going to watch today and who's going to do what. And so we went to commercial, and I mean, my cell phone rang, and it was the bosses up in the northeast. I won't say a city because and they were just livid that we had done that. It's not about country. I said, you know, holy cow, you know, get a clue. Well, anyway, so I was glad to see Fox and NBC come on the air and do and embrace country music and embrace some of the fabric, all different kinds of music, obviously, but right. Embrace the fabric that is a sport. And I'm thrilled to see NASCAR going back, and now IndyCar going to the Nashville area.
Yeah, we are too. Dr. Jerry Punch here with us. And so, yeah, they're going to race out at the Super Speedway that you spend a lot of time at. That's going to have the trucks and the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series. And then IndyCar, what do you think about this? Running the streets of downtown Nashville, the Indy Grand Prix. I can't wait for that, because I've never been to any type of race like that. I've actually never been to an IndyCar race, which is hard to believe. But watching them run the streets of downtown is going to be fantastic.
Well, I think it is. You know, and quite honestly, Teddy Phillips and a lot of the folks that were involved in putting that together in downtown in Nashville, his whole team, I spoke to them a year ago off and on. And we talked about it, and as they were getting ready to go meet with Roger Penske. And I said, it's going to be a huge win-win for you guys, for Nashville, for IndyCar. And Roger Penske, I don't care if he's 81 or whatever, he's a visionary. And he gets it. He understands. And when those guys went up and met with Penske, he embraced it. You know, what's not to love about Nashville, Tennessee, but they have the Tennessee Titans involved, the folks that, you know, there's so many different elements that check all the boxes, you know, big machine records. So they're going to have, you know, venues all over town with live music, you know, live country music, all different kinds of music. It's going to be like a festival, sort of like its own Mardi Gras. And then you're going to have the IndyCar race, where I think the garage area is going to be over by Nissan Stadium. And then they're going to race across a bridge. They've never run IndyCars across a bridge like that through the streets. If you've ever been to a Formula One race in Monaco or anywhere in Europe or some of the streets, IndyCar, they run in St. Pete, which is a little bit like Monaco with the yacht club. It is really a fabulous, fabulous couple of days. People can mill around. They can go to souvenirs. They can go the vendors, the merchants are going to love it because, you know, selling food on the streets, souvenirs, T-shirts, and then the music. It combines all these worlds of the NFL – in the right. IndyCar racing, the high-tech IndyCar racing, you know, country music, entertainment, everything Nashville has been about. to welcome in newer fans. And I think it's going to be a huge success. And I'm hoping that we continue to make progress in the right direction in terms of, you know, what's going on with COVID and the vaccine, which it seems like we are, especially here in Tennessee, and we can get a huge crowd allowed to come.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that, too, because, you know, having a packed house Father's Day weekend in June at the Super Speedway and then also for the Grand Prix is just going to be huge for the evolution of racing in this market. And, you know, you have Bristol, obviously, in East Tennessee, and then to have Nashville now in Middle Tennessee be able to put their stamp on things again, because we know the history of racing in this town. And you mentioned going on with Dale Jr. and the Dale Jr. Download. He has been a big part of trying to get racing back at the Nashville Fairgrounds as well. Why do you think that that's so passionate for him to try and help our city with not only the other two races that are coming here, but the historic fairgrounds?
Well, I think that it's a great question. I think they do a show called Lost Speedways, and he grew up, mm-hmm. when he was a kid, he didn't get to go to a lot of the tracks his dad raced, but he heard about them when his dad got home. And now it's a passion for him to go to some of the tracks that don't exist anymore. And once you get there and you start talking to people around the racetracks and people in the community, you get sad because you hear about all the great things that happened. You pull up the videos of Richard Petty. He's got, you know, a shot of Richard Petty making a pit stop and Wendell Scott pitting right beside Richard Petty. That's history. Wendell Scott breaking the color barrier, all the things he had to battle, and that's Richard talking about Wendell. I mean, that's stuff that you just hate to lose. And so, you know, Nashville is in that category. It's a track that I remember going to the Nashville Fairgrounds years and calling races. Ned and I calling races. We were on radio. I remember doing PA there for NASCAR and qualifying. It was just, I mean, the Marty Robbins, you know, Darrell Waltrips, the Utzman boys, Sterling Marlam. You go on and on and on. Mike Alexander, all the drivers over the years that were superheroes that raced there, and they packed them in, and it was just such a fun venue. Plus, it was Nashville. You go to the race, and you could leave there, and you could go eat in town, and go listen to music, and go to a club. It had everything you would want. So I think Dale Jr., like myself, you know, really wanted to get NASCAR back at the fairgrounds. Love, we got IndyCar coming. Love, you got Nashville Super Speedway coming. So you sort of got all different. It checks all different boxes. But I think Dale Jr. probably, like me, didn't realize that there were a lot of things that had to be looked at and considered before they would go with the fairgrounds. I mean, he went over there with Marcus right. Smith. They went and met with the governor. They went and met with the mayor. And the mayor did a really nice job of laying everything out. Here's what we need to make sure we take care of with regard to the fair board. Here's what we need to take care of with regard to the city. We can't have exposure and liability. We can't do this and this and this. And Marcus Smith had done his homework, and he said, okay, here's what we want to do. We want to find a way to mitigate the noise for the people who live in that area. We want to be able to schedule when events are going to happen so people know what's going to happen for an event. So we want to be able to check all the boxes, guarantee you're not going to lose money, guarantee we're going to try to make money, we're going to redo this. There's everything. It seemed like everything, and Dale Jr. told me, he said, now I understand. He said, the governor explained what it's about. The mayor did a really nice job explaining all the different elements that were involved. And Marcus Smith said, okay, we're gonna make this happen for Nashville, you know, for the city, for the fair board, for the people, for the race fans in Nashville and that part in Middle Tennessee, and, of course, in the people who live there. So I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Dr. Jerry Punch here with us on Chasing Checkers. As you know, NASCAR is a big family, and that's one thing that I love about the sport, that they bring anybody in. And we've seen a lot of changes, especially in the last few years. And, you know, Bubba Wallace has led the way with a lot of that. But Kyle Larson, we know it's well documented what happened with him last year. He gets a second chance. He ends up at Hendrick Motorsports, and four races in, he's in victory lane. What have been some of your thoughts about Kyle Larson and his return to the sport? And it was a very quick return, albeit, but return to the sport, working for Rick Hendrick, and now finding victory lane.
Well, I mean, you did a nice job of summarizing what's going on in Kyle. If you've ever met Kyle Larson, when you first met him coming through the ranks, you realize he came up through the diversity program. His family's got some Japanese descent, Asian American, and so the slur he made, the word he made, he just didn't think about what the impact of that would be and what it meant. And it right. opened his eyes in so many ways. And he went back, as you said, and did all the back stuff. So I think that, you know, not only did he go try to learn and understand, you know, the foolishness and of what he said, but also he wanted to make a difference to try to help educate other people. And I think that you know, he did it, and he didn't do it. Didn't want cameras following him. Didn't want stories written about it. He didn't do it because it was a media circus. He wanted to do it because he wanted to learn and make a difference. I think NASCAR saw that, and Rick Hendrick said, "Hey, you know what? This kid's obviously got talent, but we're going to give you. I believe in second chances. You know, I absolutely do. And so, you know, remember, Rick Hendrick is the same guy that you know took a leap of faith to start his race team and put Jeff Bodine in the car, mm-hmm. and took a leap of faith to bring Tim Richmond from IndyCar to NASCAR and stuck with him and, you know, through thick and thin. So, you know, bringing Kyle Larson back, Kyle couldn't have been more appreciative. And then Kyle goes and gets the win this past weekend. We all figured Kyle would win, but we thought it would be at Atlanta but because that's more of a track where he runs the upper lane right near the wall. But yeah, couldn't have been more happy for Kyle Larson and that whole team, and to get out and to show true emotion and to thank Rick Hendrick for giving him the opportunity. That's just what, you know, I'm a firm believer in forgiveness and second chances in our culture and in our world. So that everybody, we all make mistakes, but hopefully it's what we do with that mistake and what we learn from that mistake is really what defines us as human beings. And I think Kyle Larson paid his dues and hopefully he's going to make a difference moving forward. And I love the fact that Bubba Wallace was among the first, if not the first driver to come to Victory Lane to congratulate him.
Yeah, absolutely. As we wrap this up and appreciate your time this morning, Dr. Punch, it's been a year since everything stopped. And I know a lot of the drivers have talked about that, and we opened this interview talking about the last year. But to see where NASCAR has come in that time, because they got new fans, people, for whatever reason, you know, but people were watching when the races came back. They've used this as an opportunity to help build the sport, because this has been an ongoing process the last few years for NASCAR to reshape some things, to get some fans back, to get back to their roots while also growing. So when you look at the state of NASCAR right now, where do you think it's at?
I think the last year has been huge. Even before the pandemic, I thought that Jim France taking over, the younger brother of Bill France Jr., and I've known Jim and Bill, we call him Bill Jr. for a long time, the late Bill France, and I just thought he came over, and Jimmy France is a racer. He's a racer's racer. He gets it. He gets it with teams and drivers and fans and tracks and promoters. And I thought he was really turning this battleship around and getting it headed back to sea where it needed to be, as opposed to being grounded where it had been a couple of years before. And then when the pandemic hit, you know, NASCAR, nothing against the NFL or the NBA or anybody else or college basketball, football, but nobody, NASCAR did a really good job of basically turning on a dime and say, okay, we're going to get back, but we're going to do it the right way. And it took governors, you know, both political parties, you know, Democrats and Republican governors that had to sign off and agree to trust NASCAR and believe in NASCAR. You're going to come into a track where our whole state shut down. We're going to let you come in here and no fans, and the drivers can't even go to the garage here. They're going to come sit in their car and you'll climb in their race car, you know, and then there's not going to be minimal contact. You're going to race. Television's going to cover it. There's going to hardly be anybody there except for one announcer upstairs or everybody else in the studio. But NASCAR pulled it off. And I think that says a lot about the trust factor that these states had and with NASCAR. And then it began to build from there. I was actually in Bristol, Tennessee, the night they ran the All-Star race, and Bristol was one of the very first venues to allow fans back 25 to 30,000, and it was done so well. There were representatives there from the NFL, from major college sports, from all other professional sports. I happened to be in a suite up there. The governor of Tennessee was there with his staff. Everybody wanted to see how it was going to work. And I mean, Jerry Caldwell and his staff at Bristol Motor Speedway, if you got a ticket, I was downstairs watching people come in. They were so excited. On their phone, there was a ticket that told you what time to be at this gate. Be at this gate from 6:10 to 6:15, and you didn't have to stand in line, so you weren't lined up with a lot of people. There was social distancing. Same way with the parking lot. People sat, you know, on alternate rows. 30,000 people got to watch racing that night, and I mean, everybody in that suite was smiling and high-fiving the NFL people, the college football people that were trying to find a way to put people in stadiums. NASCAR showed the way. So with that said, I think that says a lot about the leadership in the sport. Jim France and Steve Phelps, Mike Helton, all the guys that are really pushing NASCAR where it needs to go. So I think the racing has been good this year. I almost hate to see this current car go, quite honestly. We've had such great racing on the mile and a half and surprise winners and Michael McDowell and, you know, and Chris Revell's already won. We talked about Kyle Larson. I mean, they're moving forward. They're moving forward with the sport, which I think is going to allow them to recapture some of the magic that you and I fell in love with, you know, decades ago.
Well, this has been a ton of fun, and I agree with everything you just said about it, and I can't wait to see where the sport goes. It's going to be good to have it back in Nashville as well. Dr. Jerry Punch, it's so great to talk to you. Always appreciate your time, and we will do it again very soon.
I look forward to it, Chase. Have a great day. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Dr. Punch, long time with ESPN and the pits and the booth, does it all, and also the podcast Rolling with the Punches with his daughter, Jessie. You can check that out on podcasts everywhere as well. When we come back, we'll reflect 1 year after everything stopped, what it was like for NASCAR. You'll hear from a couple of the drivers. We'll do that next. Chasing Checkers, presented by the Nashville Super Speedway, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming everywhere, streaming on the Game Nashville app, GameNashville.com. You can watch right now on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. We are worldwide. That's what we try to do here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe hanging out with you, and we are presented by the Nashville Super Speedway. You can go to NashvilleSuperspeedway.com to get your tickets for the Ally 400 weekend coming up. Father's Day weekend, June 18th through the 20th, at the Nashville Super Speedway. Tickets on sale now, so be sure to check that out. Just 99 days away from that race out at the Nashville Super Speedway. It's hard to believe that it's been a year since everything shut down. We've talked about that a lot on 102.5 The Game this week on our shows about what it was like not covering sports, I do a 4-hour show, 10 to 2 weekdays, Darren Donick and Chase talking about sports when there were no sports to talk about, just what that entire process was like. And it's hard to believe that it's only been a year. It feels like 7. But Joey Logano and Kevin Harvick reflected on what it was like a year ago. We'll start with Joey Logano. Actually, if you remember, they went to Atlanta. They unloaded at Atlanta. They were getting ready for the race weekend, and he talked about that Friday when it all came to a screeching halt.
I remember the next morning was, you know, everything started happening, right? Because that's when the NBA shut down. And it was like, okay, what's going on here? And then, you know, I remember being on the phone with Travis Geisler, and he was, you know, I was talking to him. He's like, are you guys coming down? I was like, well, we're all waiting at the airport trying to figure out what we're going to do. I'm like, what? Like, we might not practice. We might just race, you know, and all the trucks were lined up, ready to park, and all of a sudden there's no truck race and there's just going to be a cup race this weekend. It's like, oh, okay. And, you know, an hour and a half later, it's, we're not racing this weekend. I'm like, oh, wait, what? Like, we're not race. We race. That's what we do. You know, like, it was just a weird feeling. And my wife and I were just talking like, well, what do we do? And we went to the beach. I mean, like, it's kind of like, where do you go? You know, and then that just obviously started the challenge of, you know, how do we get back to the racetrack as soon as possible? How do we keep our industry alive and strong? And how do we look at this crisis and make it an opportunity to become stronger? And I feel like our industry looked at all those questions very seriously and was able to really come out ahead on the whole thing.
Joey Logano on what the last year has been like for them and what that day was like when everything shut down. I'll say this about NASCAR and the job that they've done. They recognized an opportunity even before they started racing for real. If you think about it, doing the iRacing series, the Pro Invitational series, in Fox broadcast it, having, you know, Dale Jr. part of that, but all the drivers get in their sims, buy sims, and do virtual racing. That right there showed a commitment to, hey, you all have nothing to watch sports-wise. We're going to give you something. We can't actually all be together, but we can do this virtually. And it was fantastic. And they're even going to bring it back. to do that on, I believe it's Wednesday nights. And so that right there showed you, okay, we recognize this. We want to try and get new fans. It's a great opportunity. And then they did. And then they came back. And we all know, you know, we've talked about Kyle Larson. Then the social, you know, the social injustice in the world and Bubba Wallace and getting new fans. You know, we've talked to Bernard Pollard so many times, former NFL player, African-American that just fell in love with the sport. Alvin Kamara has jumped in. And so you're seeing all these new fans and new people that want to be a part of the sport. And that's all happened in the last year. It's been a slow build before that, you know, like Dr. Punch was talking about. But I think the last year has been huge progress for NASCAR, and Kevin Harvick went on to talk about that as well.
Yeah, well, I think that the biggest thing that stands out to me is just, you know, the fact that in general, I think as a sport, we've done a really good job of navigating and adapting to our environment and doing the things that we need to do to, you know, to put on a race and a show. And obviously you're seeing fans back in the stands. And, you know, I think our sport's been a leader on a lot of those types of things. I think from a team standpoint and a sport, you know, I think we've been able to try a lot of things that we probably wouldn't have tried if it wasn't for COVID. So, you know, I think when you step back from it, I think, you know, COVID will have forever changed our sport in many different areas. I think, you know, we've realized a lot of inefficiencies that we've had as a sport, from how many people we take to the track to how we function, how many days we need to be at the track. You know, there's just so many little things that will make us more efficient, whether it's how we bring guests to the racetrack, how we sign in, the sheer number of people, the days we're at the racetrack. You know, I think there's just a lot of things that happen that probably wouldn't have happened as rapidly if we weren't in this, in this environment. So, you know, in a really, really bad scenario, I think we're going to come out of this with a lot of ideas and have tried a lot of things that we might not have necessarily tried if it was a normal year.
That's one thing that I have tried to bring up since this began, and guests that we would have on, whether it's this show or Darren, Donick, and Chase, of what are some things that, you know, may come out of this that we're going to see permanently. Prime example, a lot of the audio clips that you hear come from Zoom. And I can be at my house and jump on a Zoom press conference and talk to these drivers. It obviously hasn't always been that way. A lot of the access was, you know, going to the racetrack. And I think that that is going to come back, and it should come back. And there should be some, you know, exclusivity to going to the racetrack and being able to get those drivers. But during the week, you know, doing things like Kevin or Joey have done, I think it's cool that you're able to do that. And it bring, once again, you can connect more people. You have more people covering your sport, talking about your sport, because you're giving more access. I think things will, you know, I've been to several races where you've had a ton of people in the garage and pit road. It'll get back to that, because that's the cool factor. That's a unique part about the sport, that, you know, you can't be on a football field while they're playing a game, but you can get a pit pass and walk around while they're, you know, while they're racing. Now, could there be slight changes with that? Sure. But I think that it gets back to that eventually. But it's been cool to watch the sport adapt over the past year. And as I mentioned, with the, you know, Kyle Larson situation, he won this past weekend, and Dr. Punch alluded to it. One of the first people in Victory Lane to congratulate him was Bubba Wallace. And they're good friends. They've come up together. Bubba commented, you know, early on after the incident with Kyle Larson, of that they had talked, and he was, you know, trying to help him work through it and explain things. And but Kyle Larson talked about in what it was like to have Bubba Wallace come and congratulate him.
Yeah, it meant a lot to have Bubba come to Victory Lane. He always does a really good job of congratulating the winners. And yeah, I saw him waiting to you know, say hi or whatever to me. And so I ran over there and just had a quick moment with him. He said congrats, and, you know, he's always believed in me. So that was special, and it's really cool to have him come by and take time out of, you know, his post race, where he could, you know, be on his way to the airport to go home. But for him to come over was really cool, and I hope they can start getting some better luck with that race team and having some good runs like they deserve.
That is a prime example of just where this sport is. Those two, their friendship and forgiveness and learning and all of those things. And that is really cool to see. And that is part of the product of the last year. I mean, it's made us all think and do things differently as we have gone along and survived 2020 and now into 2021. So as they get ready to race this weekend at Phoenix, wanted to get into Kyle Larson a little bit more and his confidence, but unfortunately we're running out of time. So Kevin Harvick has the best average finish, 7.8 at Phoenix, 9 wins. It's his best racetrack, 18 top fives in 36 races. He finished second in this race last year, but he hasn't won there since 2018. I say that because that leads us in to Sunday Money. You know how this works. I give you the odds from BetMGM. I give you 3 surefire. I feel really good about that. And then 1 long shot. So let's go with the favorite is Chase Elliott at plus 500. Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski are all in the plus 600 category. But my 3 are going to be as follows. Denny Hamlin at plus 600, then Kevin Harvick at plus 600, Joey Logano plus 800 in the long shot, Kyle Busch at plus 2,500. And here's why I say this about Denny Hamlin. He's the points leader. He hasn't won a race this year. He's won twice in his career at Phoenix. And I think he is knocking on the door and about to bust through. And I believe Denny Hamlin wins this weekend. I love Kevin Harvick getting back to victory lane. That's why he's on the list. But I think Denny Hamlin busts through and gets his first win of the year. That would make 5 different winners to start the season in 2021. The record, by the way, was in 2000 with 10. So there you go. Those are the Sunday money picks. Denny Hamlin plus 600, Kevin Harvick plus 600, Joey Logano plus 800, and the long shot, Kurt Busch, at plus 2,500 for the Instacart 500 at the Phoenix Raceway. That is going to do it for this edition of Chasing Checkers. You can check out the podcast as well, ChasingCheckersRadio.com, and everything at TheGameNashville.com as well. We'll do it again next Saturday at 9 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.